to require license agents to deposit the funds on a daily basis. Those are license funds. On a daily basis. Now they deposit them on a monthly basis. And the intent of Section 2 is to gain interest on those dollars that are now being held in private accounts.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all the bill does?
Why do you need to charge the 50 cents?
For basically revenue. It will raise about $25,000 a year. And also the equity of, we get a lot of folks coming to our facilities because they're free.
That's okay.
And the license agents don't typically care for that.
All right.
And we don't really want them to plug us up either.
Okay. All right. Are there any further questions for Mr. Rousseau? Senator Kintyre.
You're depositing the funds. That was one your department deposited. You're not asking every little collector out here to deposit every day.
Senator Kintyre, we will be asking certain collectors to deposit every day. Those that routinely do with their own money, which are certainly those in metropolitan areas and the big operations, we're asking to do that with our money.
Sure.
If the small guys that live out in Rome, Oregon, that get to the bank once a week, will by rule not require.
No, the guy that may sell one or two licenses a day, or
no, there'll be some limitations on size or location.
Okay.
Okay. Any further questions? Anyone else here to testify on House Bill 2036?
Any amendments?
Close. No amendments. Close the public hearing. Open the work session on 2036. Senator Cohen moves House Bill 2036 to the floor with due process recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
Senator Kintyre?
Aye. Aye. Motion is adopted. Senator Kintyre, would you be kind enough? Okay. The chair would move that we reconsider the vote, or actually would just ask for unanimous consent that we reconsider the vote by which we sent 3097 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The reason for my motion is that we forgot to deal with one issue that needs to be dealt with.
Okay.
Senator Yee has. Is there any objection to reconsideration? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Yee. Mm-hmm. I apologize. We just got through all these amendments, and I just went, let's get it out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One little amendment. I talked to our planner of Linn County, and he said that Sweet Home is still 2 miles within this 25-air-mile radius, and 24 air miles would be much better.
24,
so,
is it?
24. What do you say?
24.
23. No. Senator Cairns, what we're concerned about is Foster Lake, and 1 mile would just make it a little bit better.
It's better.
Come on.
Wait a minute.
How many?
Senator Yee is asking us to make it 24 miles.
24, is that right?
Yes. And LCDC director say he can live with it.
24 it is.
We amend the air miles so that it reads 24 miles instead of 25 miles. Is there any objection to that amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Cairns moves House Bill 3097 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Thank you very much, sir. Sweet home, love.
Oh, yay. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Just to make sure.
Senator Cairns.
Cairns.
You bet. Aye.
Senator Kintyre.
Aye.
Who's Cairns?
Senator Bradbury.
Aye.
Senator Cohen.
Aye.
Motion is adopted. Senator Brennan still carrying the bill. Okay, let's open the hearing on 3383 with real apologies to all the people who've come here from Lakeview. You've gotten a chance to watch the legislative process at work.
And if they still want to come forward.
Now, let's ask Bill Dixon, Marlene Mitchell, and I can't read the other name, but they know who they are, so why don't they come up? Now, there are a couple other people that probably need to sign up. I know that Mr. Barbette needs to sign up, and I don't know if there's anybody else here who has not signed up that wants to testify. They should do so. Here. Welcome.
Welcome.
Identify yourselves for the record and proceed.
Chairman Bradbury, members of the committee, I'm Marlene Bayless Mitchell, and I'm the vice chair of the Energy Facility Siting Council. The council asks for your help today to ensure that the Lakeview cleanup is completed. I know that you're aware that the council is a seven-member citizen body which makes policy decisions on major energy issues. And we use broad public involvement in our decision-making. The Oregon Department of Energy carries out those decisions. Today, the Oregon Department of Energy staff will briefly review the chronology and the technical aspects of the project. Then I will discuss the Siting Council's role. First, Bill Dixon, who is Administrator of Siting and Regulation, will explain to you the chronology of the Lakeview project.
Bill? Mr. Chairman, I thought it would be helpful to briefly go through the chronology to understand how we got to where we are. Between 1958 and 1961, a uranium mill operated in Lakeview and was then abandoned. In the mid-1970s, the state forced the existing owner to remove contaminated equipment from the mill and also to put dirt over top of the tailings pile to prevent windblown material. During the past 9 years, we've had a rather intensive effort to try to get the mill and the tailings pile cleaned up, and we're now within about 1 year of completing that. Briefly, in 1978, Congress passed an act that authorized cleanup of 24 sites around the country. It required a cooperative effort between the federal government and the state and required the use of federal standards for the cleanup. It also requires a license by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. In 79, the legislature passed a law authorizing the state, through the Energy Facility Siting Council, to enter into a cooperative agreement with the federal government on the cleanup of the mill at Lakeview, and again said that that should be done in accordance with federal standards. In 1983, EPA finally adopted those federal standards. Through Senator Hatfield, we were successful in getting Lakeview moved up from what was the bottom of the list of 24 sites to the top, and we got Congress to authorize funds to begin studying Lakeview. Then in 84, we formed a Citizens Advisory Committee in Lakeview to begin study of the old mill site. In April, we, along with the Citizens Advisory Committee and the federal government, concluded that we could not stabilize the material at the old mill site. Rather, we'd have to find a better site for disposal. Therefore, we launched an alternate site selection process. In June, the federal government and Oregon did sign a cooperative agreement on the cleanup, stating that federal standards would be used. And I might add that cooperative agreement was signed in Lakeview after public review and comment. In July, the Legislative Emergency Board reviewed the progress that we had made and authorized the department to establish a position for a state program manager on the cleanup. In fall, we were successful in getting Congress to authorize funding for the alternate site selection and to begin the conceptual design. Then in November, ballot measure 9 passed. So the Siting Council asked the Attorney General for his advice. In January of 85, the Attorney General said that a site certificate was not required and that ballot measure 9 did not apply to Lakeview. So we can proceeded with the process. In April, the Siting Council went again to Lakeview, toured the alternate sites that were being considered, and took public comment on those. In June, the 1985 legislature did authorize up to $1.5 million to be spent on the cleanup. That money was set aside for the emergency board to release once we came in with the final design and the final cost estimate. They also wanted to make sure that local concerns were addressed before that money was spent. In September, again, the state, federal government, and the local advisory committee agreed upon the alternate site that would be used and the conceptual design. Again, that was done out in Lakeview after extensive public review and comment. Again, we were successful in getting Congress to authorize funds, this time for the final design and to actually begin construction. Then last year, we reviewed with the Joint Interim Committee on Hazardous Materials, of which some of you were members, the status of the project in January. In February, Four Laws on Board filed suit with the Court of Appeals. In March, there were a number of things that happened. First, we signed an agreement with the site owner, John Collins, to give us access to the site so that the project could proceed. Mr. Collins asked the state to initiate a friendly condemnation suit because he wanted to litigate the price that we had offered him in court, and so we did that. Again, we reviewed with the Joint Interim Committee on Hazardous Materials the specific site that we were going to use, the specific design that we were going to use, and discussed our intent to proceed. Then a few days after that, we appeared before the emergency board, again discussed the site and the design, why that design was good, and how we had resolved the local concerns. And at that time, the emergency board authorized that we begin spending the funds. In May, Lake County approved the necessary land use change to allow the project to proceed. In June, the federal government, Oregon, and the local advisory committee agreed on the final design. And so in July, we began construction. This fall, again, we were successful in getting Congress to authorize funds, this time enough to complete the project. We worked through about November and had to stop construction because of winter weather. As you know, March of this year, the Court of Appeals ruled contrary to the Attorney General opinion that a site certificate was required. And the Attorney General has a representative here who can speak to their opinion in that court case. In April, the Siting Council decided to appeal that decision. Now, within this last month, we've actually resumed construction, actually about 10 days ago because of the good weather that we've had out there. And just recently, the legislature did approve funding to complete the construction. If we have good weather, we hope to complete the construction by this fall. Otherwise, it might take until until next summer. I think what this chronology shows is that we've had 9 years of hard work to get to where we are today, that we've had a very open process, that the process, the site, and the design have been reviewed and approved by many organizations at the federal level, by Congress, the U.S. Department of Energy, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, at the state level by the legislature, the Siting Council, and the Oregon Department of Energy, and at the local level by the County Commission and the Local Advisory Committee. We believe the process has resulted in a good site and a good design, and we believe that our actions have been consistent with federal and state laws.
Now we're going to ask Felix Mura to give you a visual picture of this project. We think that might help you to put this all in perspective.
Thank you, Marlene. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we have just a few slides here that we'd like to share with you that would give you some perspective of what we're facing out at Lakeview. And then after the slide presentation, we've also given you a handout where we'd like to go over in detail the alternate site selection process that we went through and why the design for the Lakeview project is good. This is the site as it looked prior to the startup of construction. It covers approximately 130 acres.
Site of the mill or the site of the disposal area?
That's the site of the mill.
Okay.
Yes, where it existed in 1958-61. On the upper right-hand corner, the squarish area that you see that's kind of bordered and a yellow color with dried grass on it is the mill tailings themselves. These are the solid waste that were left after the processing. They cover approximately 30 acres. There were some 130,000 tons of ore that were processed out at the site. The lower portion of the screen, you can see what were the raffinate ponds or the old evaporation ponds at the site. These covered some 65 acres and handled all the liquid waste that were generated through the milling process. Now, the tailings themselves were covered with 2 feet of clean soil for interim stabilization in 1976. The bottom evaporation ponds were never covered and presented dusting problems to the community throughout their existence. This site gives you a north to south orientation of the site, and shows some of the reasons why this site was not suitable for long-term stabilization. You'll see to the lower left-hand or right-hand portion of the screen, you can see groundwater that is close to the surface of the ground. There was also determined to be significant seismic and faulting activity in this region. In addition, the closest resident is within a quarter of a mile to the site. You can see the main portion of Lakeview located up in the upper left-hand portion of the slide.
How many miles is the Lakeview? It's just about a couple, isn't it?
It's about 1 mile.
That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. Very close.
Yes, very close, sir. This is the new site, an aerial view of it, and again, we'll go through with you the detail of how we selected this site. But some of the advantages were optimum to engineering a very adequate site. You can see up on the upper portion of the slide, the tree line is about where the nearest stream is, over a half a mile from the site. The site itself is located on a small knoll out there, which was good for going below grade and providing some protection to the final disposal site. The remoteness of the site was also a big consideration, the nearest resident being over a mile and a half from the site. As Bill mentioned, this was some of the starting construction on the site last July and August, when we were excavating out the cell at the new disposal site. This is what the site looked like close to the end of the construction season last fall. The darker material is the contaminated waste. Around the edge of the darker material, the lighter colored material, is our clay-enhanced liner, which is utilized for protecting groundwater.
That's true.
Senator Karen.
Can you make a note to tell me the composition of your so-called clay-enhanced liner, what that is? Not now, but when we get somebody make a note of that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator Cairns, we will. This is the wastewater treatment facility which was being erected this winter. All wash water for decontamination of vehicles and equipment before they leave the site, and also any runoff, storm runoff that's collected, is contained in synthetically lined evaporation ponds, wastewater retention ponds at the site. The plant will be utilized to treat the water before it can be discharged from the site. And this is a slide of what the current site of the old site looks like. Now that we have begun construction at this site, the lighter colored material is the tailings and contaminated waste that are now exposed to the environment, subject to wind and water erosion. The standing water that you see there is where we have started to excavate around the tailings and is resulted from runoff, precipitation, and the shallow groundwater table. That pretty much concludes our slide presentation.
Thank you, Felix. I should have explained to you that Felix is the project manager at Lakeview. As Bill explained to you, the 1979 legislature directed the Siting Council to cooperate with the federal government on the cleanup. And in the spring of 1984, we authorized the Department of Energy to sign a cooperative agreement with the federal government to do this. The agreement was signed in June. And after ballot measure 9 passed, at the council's November 1984 meeting, the question was raised of whether ballot measure 9 applied to the Lakeview cleanup. At that time, we asked for the Attorney General's advice on it, and an opinion was issued in January of 1985 stating that it did not apply. At the same time, I had been aware of campaign literature in the Ballot Measure 9 campaign that did state that Ballot Measure 9 did not apply. I have given you copies. This is an 8-page piece, but I've given you copies of the first page, the last page, and page 3 on which the statement is highlighted. I'd be happy to copy all 8 pages for you, but being a public employee myself, I'm always conscious of copying things that aren't necessary. But we will see that you have a whole copy of it. On page 3, the highlighted section...
Excuse me, Senator Cairns.
Never mind. The authors of the statement are identified.
Yes, the authors are identified on the back page, Citizens for Responsible Radioactive Waste Disposal. And there are a number of groups, including Four Laws on Board, that are listed there. The right-hand column on page 3 in the item 2 at the top of the page says in the second sentence, Measure 9 does not apply to the disposal of the mill tailings abandoned in Lakeview, Oregon. These wastes are under the jurisdiction of the Federal Uranium Mill Tailings Radiation Control Act. All future uranium mine and mill tailings disposal in Oregon would fall under ballot Measure 9. So it's my feeling that many people who voted in favor of ballot Measure 9 had an opportunity to review this material and felt that the measure was not going to apply to Lakeview. The council decided to move ahead with the project, and we proceeded with the cleanup plan. We developed a program for active public involvement. In fact, I think it could serve as a model for community involvement in problem solving. Through a broad-based advisory committee, the community reviewed and agreed with each step in the process. There were approximately 30 public meetings on the cleanup project. These were held in Lakeview. And we had siting council meetings in Lakeview. The council met in Lakeview 3 times. We met before we authorized the signing of the cooperative agreement. We met there to approve the new disposal site and to approve the disposal design. At each step, we ensured that our actions were consistent with state and federal laws and provided good technical solutions. I might mention to you that 3 of the council members do have advanced degrees in the sciences. We have a doctorate of biochemistry, we have a doctorate of chemistry, and we have a mechanical engineer, in addition to others of us who are more representative of the general population. Also, we ensured there were ample opportunities for public involvement and that our actions were responsive to local concerns. We believe that the cleanup program and process complies with all applicable state and federal laws, and we believe the site and design provide a high level of protection for the public health and safety and the environment. The reason that we're seeking legislative action at this time is that we're at a critical juncture. Either we complete the cleanup that the local community, state, and federal agencies, and that the council itself believe is safe, or we stop work and redo the process. If we stop, we must gamble that the state and federal funding and priority will still be available, and that the public and the environment will not be harmed from the partially completed project, with mill tailings now exposed in 2 locations, as you saw in the slide presentation. We've acted in good faith to carry out the direction from prior legislative assemblies, and we need your help to ensure that the cleanup is completed. Some have asked why the Siting Council has not adopted administrative rules on ballot Measure 9. And let me assure you that it's a question of need. Ballot Measure 9 applies when a site certificate is to be issued. To this point, no such certificate has been issued. And at this time, we're not expecting one in the future. So a management decision was made to not allocate staff resources to that project at this time. Rather, we directed the staff to work on more pressing issues. However, because we're sensitive to the legislature's concern on this issue, we will discuss rulemaking at our next meeting, July 2nd, and I am committed to leading the discussion on that and to moving that we go into rulemaking on that. So in summary, let me just say that the legislature directed the siting council to cooperate with the federal government to achieve a safe cleanup. And after many years of hard work, we feel we've developed a plan and begun a cleanup that protects the public. We think that the local residents agree, and you're going to hear from some of them soon. The community seems to be very supportive of this project. We need your help to ensure that the cleanup is completed, and House Bill 3383 would help us do that. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Mr. Chairman, we did hand out talking about the design. We can go through that in any depth that you want to, but to answer Senator Karen's question, when we developed the design, one of the questions was protection of groundwater. It was very important to the state, very important to the local community. So we researched the literature and past practices to find what is the best way to protect groundwater. Some had suggested that synthetic liners would be good, and in fact they are good, but they only last for about 50 years. The best protection of groundwater, the best liner that you can have, is what God gave us, and that's very thick clay. And so we have a 2-foot thick clay liner on the bottom of the tailings that will prevent any radioactive material from escaping the disposal cell.
You used the words clay enhanced. Is it a mixture of clay, or is it clay? And some of the material that I've read regarding the project from, I don't know where it's from, the Department of Energy regarding the project itself, they use the term clay, and other areas they use the term earth, and then you use the term clay enhanced. What I want to know is the underlinement of that disposal site. Is it clay? That's what I want to know. Is it all clay, or is it something that you call clay enhanced material, or is it earth? What is it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Karen's, Felix can respond to the specific composition of the clay.
Yeah.
It has to meet the design standard that it will not release radioactive material.
What is it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Senator Karens, the clay composition has to be optimized. If you had a liner that consisted of pure clay, then it would be such as putting in a concrete liner or asphalt. The problem with that being that if you have any seismic activity or anything like that, it would crack, yes. And so the clay content is optimized to prevent that type of an occurrence.
What do you optimize it with? What does it consist of?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Karens, the current design consists of about 15% clay. There are two properties that we looked at in designing that liner. First of all, it's the what we call the permeability, or the rate of movement of water through that material, which is very slow. Now the clay, the chemical physical properties of the clay help to tie up any heavy metals or radioactive materials, which are, in this case, in any case, metals in themselves, from moving through. A second property of the materials that were used in this liner are some of the natural properties that it had. Now, the soils in this area were alkaline in nature, basic type. And this helped in the sense that it would neutralize any of the wastes which are acid. Because of the milling process, they used an acid leach extraction. And so they, in addition to the clay content, which gives it the low permeability, we also, the alkaline properties would help it to act as a buffer to neutralize any material from moving through.
Okay, so it's essentially local alkaline earth enhanced with 15% of a clay medium. Is that correct? And that is then rolled on the site. Is that right? Compacted.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Senator.
Okay, and that's in the opinion of the department, that was the best characteristic for that liner that you could have done under the circumstances available to you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kerins, yes, it was the department's decision, as well as it was reviewed by the Federal Department of Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
And they felt that that was the optimum choice?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Mr. Chairman, we do have that handout. Would you like further information on the design, or have you heard?
Well, I looked through it. I guess in the interest of time, given the number of witnesses, we don't have that many witnesses, but if you could walk through, I mean, you know, you're going to have to do kind of a hop, skip through it. That'd be great. I've looked through it. It's pretty clear that you went through a lot of siting criteria to get the site you picked. If you want to kind of highlight the issues in there, I'd be fine with me. But we're short of time, so, you know.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to select our alternate site after we determined that the current location of the tailings was not adequate, we established, through all involved parties, a list of 23 criteria and ranked various sites within a 700-square-mile area. Ultimately came up with 7 preliminary sites for evaluation. We narrowed this down later to 3 final sites. The Collins site was the one that gave us the best protection.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, please.
Madam Chair. You used a rank ordering of point values for all of the...
Such protection has never been provided at Lakeview. In fact, there has never been an environmental impact statement performed on the site. The environmental assessment, a less rigorous analysis which was performed, clearly demonstrates not only the shortcomings of the site, but also the fact that it absolutely fails to meet the intent, and I use those terms because that's what the Oregon Department of Energy has used in submittals, of ballot measure 9 standards, as testified to by Bill Dixon of the Oregon Department of Energy. I provide the following examples. Ballot Measure 9 requires that a radioactive waste disposal site not be located, quote, in or adjacent to active earthquake fault zone, unquote. The environmental assessment states the Collins Ranch site lies in a seismic risk zone 2. Moderate damage would be expected from a maximum predictable earthquake. The site is within the Goose Lake Gabrin fault zone. There is no historic seismicity assigned to the faults in this area. The maximum credible earthquake was estimated to be 7.2 and would generate a horizontal ground acceleration of 0.48 g. A conclusion might be reached that this doesn't really sound all that bad, unless one reads in the appendix that, quote, the seismic hazard evaluation is conservative in its approach. This conservatism is necessitated by the lack of studies of fault activity and historic seismicity in the region, unquote. Yet we were told that the, quote, evaluation was accomplished using state-of-the-art methods of hazard assessment and is based upon a review and interpretation of the available literature of the Lakeview region and brief reconnaissance trips to the area. This alone would fail to meet the kind of analysis required by Measure 9. Ballot Measure 9 requires, quote, that following closure of the site, there will be no release of radioactive materials or radiation from the waste, unquote. This prevents the kind of radiation standards being applied by the federal government that literally represent biological experimentation from legally leaking waste repositories. The environmental assessment states that, quote, the design objective, unquote, of the Collins Ranch site is to, quote, reduce the average radon flux from the site to 20 picocuries per meter second or 0.5 picocuries per liter outside the disposal site, unquote. While limited data exist on background levels, quote, radon concentration measurements were made at each site, resulting in an average radon concentration of 0.12 picocuries per liter at one location at the Collins Ranch site, unquote. Thus, the design objective for radon release in comparison to the one background measurement is approximately 4 times greater. Elsewhere in the environmental assessment, it states, quote, following remedial action, there will be no exposure to direct gamma radiation since Each alternative site includes the construction of an earthen cover which gamma radiation would not penetrate. However, there would continue to be a small public exposure to radon and radon daughters following remedial action because the cover for each alternative would substantially reduce but not eliminate the release of radon. The tailings cover for each alternative would have low permeability and therefore slow the rate of radon diffusion through the cover. Most of the radon would decay into solid daughter products before the radon could diffuse through the cover and enter the atmosphere. The rate of radon flux would be no greater than the allowable levels contained in the Environmental Protection Agency standards. This does not, obviously, does not meet the intent about Measure 9, yet it provides the usual opportunity for the federal government to project extremely low health effects. Quote, the excess health effects to the general population within 6 miles of the Collin Ranch site following remedial action would be 0.19 times 10 to the minus 4 per year, which is a factor of 42 lower than the health effects estimate for the no action alternative, which would be to leave it at the existing location. The low population density in the vicinity of the Collins Ranch site is the primary reason for the reduction of excess health effects, more so than the decreased radon flux accomplished by engineering disposal site conceptual design, which is a very interesting statement. Of course, these unproven assumptions fail to take into account worst-case scenarios, such as the effect of a population increase, or natural events such as rise in groundwater levels, which would cause saturation of the tailings, or the health effects of the loss of waste isolation resulting from seismic activity, water erosion, or other natural resources. Again, the above are only examples and in no way represent the kind of thorough analysis yet to be performed at the Lakeview site. The cost versus the benefit of House Bill 3383. In the environmental assessment, it states, tailings relocation to the Collins Ranch site would produce $3,470,000 in local wages and salaries, $5,860,000 in local expenditures for material, $1,300,000 in local expenditures for equipment, using a multiplier of 1.23, an additional $798,100 in local spending would result. Thus, the total impact of the Collins Ranch alternative on the local economy is represented to be $11,428,000. And then I quote from Representative Larry Soa, I'd just like to tell you the real issue behind this controversy. The issue is a state agency that has made a decision unilaterally on their own not to follow state law. The Energy Facility Siting Council made a decision that they weren't going to set the standards by which these kinds of operations could be cleaned up. The Department of Energy unilaterally decided they weren't going to file for a site certificate for this area, and the process went on. And now the state legislature is asked to cover the backside of the state agencies that didn't abide by state law. Since 1981, Four Lawson Board has worked full-time to protect the health and welfare of all Oregonians from irresponsible and inadequate disposal of radioactive waste in Oregon. We are not obstructionists, and we are not interested in blocking the proper disposal of mill tailings in Lakeview, nor are we interested in losing federal assistance in this disposal operation. Our efforts to help pass and implement ballot Measure 9 were never intended as an act of vanity or ego. We have struggled on behalf of those who, like ourselves, must inherit the earth, hopefully better than we found it. We have acted from an obligation to provide a level of compassion which extends beyond the economy of the moment. You were told that, quote, because we have two unfinished sites, we place the community of Lakeview at public health risk, or we place the community of Lakeview at a public health risk, unquote. The goal here is not to have two unfinished sites, which can be stabilized, until the situation is resolved, or even one inadequate site, but to have the best disposal plan implemented by law. This goal is achievable, for Oregon is not without political power, legal and financial resources necessary to achieve the best result in Lakeview. You were told that, quote, the U.S. Department of Energy said in writing that they would pull out of the project and apply limited resources to one of the remaining 20 sites in the country. Miraculously, an affidavit from the federal government appears dated April 20, 1987, which states, and I quote, time delay. The Lakeview uranium mill tailings cleanup could be further impacted beyond the scheduling delays mentioned under Item A, scheduling. The UMTRA project was mandated by the U.S. Congress with a completion date of March 1990. although it appears likely that the program will be extended to March 1993, which is another example of flexibility, there is still a very definite urgency for completing remedial action at these designated processing sites as quickly as possible. In the event further remedial action is stopped at Lakeview, the U.S. Department of Energy will have no choice but to direct our remedial action contractor to terminate their existing subcontracts in Lakeview and demobilize and reprioritize the remaining designated processing sites to be completed in the UMTRA program. Another site would be elevated to start remedial action and replace Lakeview. Completion of remedial action at Lakeview will be rescheduled to fit into the most suitable time frame for the U.S. Department of Energy resources. This could add significantly to the overall time period to complete remedial action. Notice they're not pulling out. Funding and costs. The funding for remedial action at Lakeview could be jeopardized at both the federal and state level. The UMTRA program works off of appropriations from the U.S. Congress each year. While funding is currently available to complete the Lakeview project, slippage of the actual cleanup time to the time period when low-priority UMTRA sites will be cleaned up could be problematic. Support for funding in Congress may not be as strong at that time, and there is a potential that funds may not be available. Further, the cost for completion of remedial action at Lakeview could substantially increase. Existing contracts would be terminated and appropriate settlements made with existing subcontractors. Escalation factors would have to be incorporated into any new bids with a strong possibility of much higher costs. There are many things that, quote, could be, and lots of strong possibilities. There is a strong possibility that the radioactive waste at Lakeview is presently being inadequately disposed. If this is found to be true, once the federal government is off the hook, who then would pay for adequate disposal? Inadequately disposed waste means someone else must bear the cost in the future, and in Lakeview, that someone else becomes the people of Oregon. Attached are two letters written to Congressman Lesa Coyne and Senator Mark Hatfield, which, by the way, should be attachment 9. I have two attachment 8s, and I apologize for that, which I believe asks the question which should have been asked all along. As you are a member of the House or Senate Appropriations Committee, I write this letter to ask if it is possible that the U.S. DOE can take congressionally appropriated funds and withdraw them from remedial cleanup at Lakeview because it refuses to abide by state standards. Furthermore, I ask if you would be powerless to stop such actions on the part of the U.S. Department of Energy. As testified to by Representative Ron Ekus, House Bill 3383 is a blatant attempt to blackmail the legislature, not by the U.S. DOE, but by the Oregon Department of Energy, who sponsors legislation and procured this affidavit to thwart laws adopted by their legislature and initiatives adopted by the voters. We ask the members of this committee to have the courage to table HB 3383 or adopt the minority report in Attachment 8. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. And Mr. Meek may have some additional comments that he would like to make. Okay. And I hope that answers the questions that you were attempting to raise.
Didn't.
Well, maybe you could restate them for me.
I want to know what your proposal is to resolve the issue other than have it comply with Measure 9.
Well, that's not why we're here. I'm not here to have it do anything but apply Measure 9.
But what was the end? But you haven't shared. I don't have any idea what you're wanting to gain by that. I mean,
as I've shown you in the examples in my testimony, you gain a far greater degree of assurance that these wastes will be adequately disposed because the standards are far stricter than the standards that are being applied by the federal government.
But we have never developed. There's no guarantee of that in my.
Absolutely.
What would you do? Would you haul it? Where would you haul it? I mean, would you haul it? Would you leave it there, or would you? What would one do?
As the court has indicated, there is a need for a licensing process. That's the whole purpose for the legislature creating state agencies and instituting licensing processes is to review.
Okay, I guess I don't. I remember 1979. And I was very much involved in that, in trying to get some acknowledgement that Lakeview was a problem. And I remember sitting in this very room, or and seeing slides of Lakeview and seeing slides of New Mexico and all of that, and I guess I, my reflection is that we told them to get busy and do it, and to do it according to the federal standards that could be worked out right then and get on with it. And I'm not sure how we would redo it right now. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you have, you know, unless that would be to take it to John Day or someplace where you'd be further away from groundwater.
I don't think that those kinds of extreme examples are what we're asking to be applied here today. I want to be clear about that.
I need to know what the resolution, when you start down some argument here, other than have it come under Measure 9, which to me is not anything I can grasp, because there's no alternative being presented here. I mean, I don't know what your alternatives are.
The alternatives, it's unfortunate that we find ourselves in the position that we are in. We basically have in a rush to judgment, so to speak,
I think reached a decision in 1979.
Well, that may be. I can't speak to your recollection as to what the legislature was attempting to do to Lakeview in 1979.
But if you're
aware of the evolution of the anti-nuclear movement, there has been an extreme effort to try and raise the level of consciousness in how we treat these kind of materials. That was the whole purpose for passing ballot Measure 9. And that's been my whole purpose.
It's sort of like the people who come and talk about, who harangue about Cub, you know, on the other direction. And you make it, it's, I feel like I'm listening to the utilities talking about the Cub people now, listening to you, Lloyd. And I'm sorry, I don't have a frame of reference for what you're saying. Your arguments do not lead me to any rational end. I don't know what you're trying to get.
I ask you to examine the standards about Measure 9. Have you looked specifically at the law that was created? Because I think that will answer a lot of your questions. What you're doing is, it's just like any kind of thing, even in the administration.
I understand that. I know the law. I know what we asked them to do in 1979 may have been that ballot measure number 9 may have certainly came after that.
Considerably.
And that's where I'm down the line on that.
Madam
just
Chair.
Grant.
Mr. Meek, were you counsel in the Four Laws on Board appeal of the FSAC declaratory action before the Supreme Court?
Counsel who filed the brief was Linda Williams. I participated beginning in February 1987 in arguing the appeal.
Well, what were the grounds for that? I mean, you heard my questions to the Attorney General's office on the question of the grounds for that appeal. What was it you were trying to do there, A, in relationship to the 1979 statute in which the legislature did its damnedest and apparently may not have completed its work, try to set a two-tier set of standards for dealing with mill tailings, and B, ballot Measure 9 as it relates to Lakeview. What was your argument? The Attorney General says there was no argument vis-a-vis ballot Measure 9, but there was primarily an argument vis-a-vis the 1979 statute and its ambiguity.
There were arguments on both matters. What we were trying to do was simply require the state agencies to enforce state law as it existed. And the court agreed that there was really no ambiguity involved as far as the requirement for a site certificate proceeding for Lakeview. In fact, page 5 of the court's decision stated that the plain meaning of the words used in ORS 469, 553, and 559 leads us to the same syllogistic simplicity that the council ascribes to petitioner. Nothing in the language of those sections can be understood as meaning that the disposal facilities constructed or operated under state-federal cooperative agreements concerning tailings from inactive sources are exempt from the site review procedures. So the court simply looked at the law and the legislative history and concluded that there was no ambiguity and that a site certificate proceeding was required. As far as the application of ballot measure 9 standards, the court did not address that, although we did. We claimed that ballot measure 9 standards would apply. And the reason that the court did not address that is because it did not believe there was a controversy there. It did not believe that the Energy Facility Siting Council had in fact taken the opposite position. And I guess they didn't, because if you look at the Energy Facility Siting Council's own declaratory ruling, which started the litigation process, it states that ORS 469-559 requires the use of federal standards in the cleanup at Lakeview. ORS 469-553 would impose state standards. It was arguing that 469-553 should not apply to the Lakeview site because the council had already come to the conclusion that federal standards should apply. FSEC was saying if the court decides that ORS 469-553, that is the site certificate proceeding, does apply to Lakeview, then state standards would apply. And there's absolutely no question that they would, because 469.553 states that the Energy Facility Siting Council shall review an application for a site certificate under this section using the procedure prescribed in ORS, lists a bunch of sections, including 469.375, and those are the ballot measure 9 standards. Precisely, that's where ballot measure 9 is codified. So even the Siting Council agrees that if the siting process, the state siting process, is required, then ballot measure 9 standards apply.
Excuse me.
And the court ruled that the state siting council, the state siting process, is required.
That's that, Madam Chair. I'm going to have to ask the Department of Energy and FSAC to make a note of that, because that seems to be, at least in my lay understanding of the issue, to be a giving up a small amount of ground on the part of FSAC, and goes in the opposite direction from the argument of the contract, which predates the adoption and effective date of ballot measure 9.
Well, as far as the contract goes, I also think that this committee should look very carefully at the letter of legislative counsel that was received today. I received it just a couple of minutes before this hearing started. I think that you'll want to look at that not only in the context of this issue in ballot measure 9, but also generally. I think what that letter is saying is that there is an impairment of contract if state law, and that would include any state law, including any law for the protection of health, safety, or consumer protection.
We threw out at least one law invalidated last time that we passed, and do the contracts.
Well, I think what the legislative council...
constitutional. You're making an argument as to the constitutional protection of contract. Is that right?
Well, no, the Legislative Council is making that argument, and I think the argument is extremely exaggerated in this Legislative Council's letter, and I would very much urge you to read it. It appears that the Legislative Council is saying that any change in state law would impair contracts if it would alter the obligation of any party under an existing contract or increase the cost of a party's performance. And I think that is really a ludicrous proposition and would totally eviscerate the legislature.
See, that's what went down on the whole question of the veterans raising interest rates on the veterans loan program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been in that situation at least twice that I can think of in the last session, that we passed legislation and was then overruled under those terms, mm-hmm. and some of them not as specific in a way of contract as individual contracts, but even broader.
Well, the legislature's power is recognized by the courts as being extremely broad, especially in the area of protecting public health and safety, and that's what ballot measure 9 was about. And here, I think, just let me give you a couple of examples what I think this legislative council's opinion is saying. Let's say that I agree with Friendly Corporation, whatever it is, to buy its product, and Friendly Corporation emits pollution in the production process. I think with the legislative council's opinion, in effect, is saying that the state cannot then impose pollution control requirements on friendly corporation because that would impair obligation of contracts or increase the cost of friendly corporation's performance of its contract with me. And that's obviously ridiculous. The legislature can adopt health and safety requirements even though it increases the cost of performing any existing contract. Now let's see, I agree with an agent of Friendly Securities Company to engage in a series of insider trading transactions. The legislature then prohibits insider trading. Well, is that an impairment of contract and therefore invalid and beyond the legislature's authority to adopt? I don't agree with that either. And finally, let's say the state buys paper from the Friendly Paper Company at a price that's fixed in the contract. Is the state then precluding from changing any requirements of law that increase Friendly Paper Company's cost of production, that is, pollution control requirements, pension funding requirements, workers' compensation requirements? What the Legislative Council's letter is arguing is that that would be an impairment of contract. It would increase the cost of Friendly Corporation's performance of a contract with the state. That is precisely the argument Legislative Council is making, and I think that it may be a good idea for this committee to ask the Legislative Council to reconsider and perhaps to draw its opinion in a much narrower way in order to avoid potential evisceration or an argument that the legislature has virtually no authority at all in the health and safety or consumer protection area if it happens to increase the cost of performance of existing contracts, which it almost certainly will. Finally, about the Legislative Council's opinion, the cooperative agreement... They contend that the cooperative agreement signed in 1984 was only subject to laws that were in existence at that time, and that any future modifications of the law don't apply to the cooperative agreement. But I would point out to you that throughout the cooperative agreement, the Federal Department of Energy has agreed to abide by state law, and only in about 10 or 15 different places, and only in one place in the cooperative agreement is the language existing state law used. And when that is used, and throughout the agreement is written in the future tense. It says, DOE shall select and perform remedial actions at the mill sites, et cetera, in accordance with the EPA standards and other applicable state and federal law. It is contemplated that the state will fully participate in the selection and performance of such remedial action. Remedial action shall be carried out to the greatest extent practicable in accordance with the priorities established by DOE. It shall be performed using technology that will assure compliance with EPA standards and will assure the safe and environmentally sound stabilization of residual radioactive materials consistent with existing applicable law. So it's all written in the future tense. What it means is that when these activities take place in the future, they will comply with existing law.
Ooh, that's a terrific argument. That's a terrific argument, Mr. Meek.
In any event,
I give you 10.5 points for that one. I love that one. I don't mean to be too facetious, but I love your construction on that, and that's brilliant.
Well, so far the courts have agreed with our construction and not with FX.
I understand that.
And finally, only one other comment, really, and that is that I think you all should consider what FSEC is telling you here, and it is a form of blackmail. FSEC is saying, unless you let us off for this, unless you allow us to continue to violate the law, which we haven't made one move toward enforcing in the past 2.5 years since it was enacted, then we're going to let this waste at Lakeview sit exposed and let the wind and the rain blow it around and disperse it around unless you change the law now and, in fact, retroactively apply the law to Lakeview. And I would like to ask, who procured this affidavit from the Department of Energy dated April 20th that says that the Federal Department of Energy may want to pull out? Perhaps it was the Oregon Department of Energy that asked the Federal Department of Energy to write this affidavit for the specific purpose of placing pressure on the legislature to enact this statute. Now, was it the federal government's idea that they would pull out if state standards apply? I don't think so, because throughout the cooperative agreement, the federal government has agreed to comply with state standards, and that's explicitly required by the Uranium Mill Tailings Control Act of 1978. So I just wonder whose idea this affidavit was.
You're not winning any points by that kind of comment.
Yeah. Well, I still wonder about it.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I don't know whether he's winning or losing points on that. I think that's a side issue, and
takes a lot of time. So, yeah, so, and we have somebody who's come from a long way to testify.
I would also like to ask, you know, that, you know, is it is true that your construction is if all of the agreement is in the future tense, then that somehow snaps forward the applicable laws in effect at the time the future tense becomes the present. I think that's brilliant. No, I'm serious. I love that one. But that wasn't the point at which, and I won't argue against it. I think that's, you know, but that's not the point at which the appeals court decided, is it?
Oh, no, the appeals.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to do. Yeah, so we recognize that that is an excellent argument on your side, and one that that I have to appreciate, but it's not the point at which the appeals court held in your favor.
If I may point out, the issue was never presented to the appeals court.
Right. Okay. But your response was that so far the courts have agreed with us. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make sure that while those were standing and next to each other, they weren't related.
Okay.
True.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's hear from Sally and Gordon Tracy and whoever else you've brought up from the Lakeview Citizens Advisory Committee.
I'm going to call me. Question.
Yeah, I need 1 to 5, so.
Okay.
Catch my bus, Sarah, on this highway. Do you want to call them before they start?
No, we'll have to do it another day anyway.
Go ahead and go first.
Sure.
Good afternoon, Senator Kearns and Senator Cohen. I'm Gordon Tracy. I've involved myself in the Lakeview tailings for the last 3 years as chairman of the local advisory or local task group for this tailings project. I need to emphasize Lakeview has a problem. We have two sites with contaminated materials. They are in the process of moving these tailings from the former mill site in Lakeview to the more environmentally sound Collins site 7 miles from town. We have a reality, two uncovered sites containing radioactive waste. We have spent 3 years preparing for one of the largest environmental cleanups in Oregon's history. We as a community involved ourselves to date in over 30 public meetings. We have met with experts in hydrology, geology, engineering, ecology, botany, and many other disciplines. We've had some of the best minds in the country involved in working with the community on this siting. The current location of the tailings, in addition to being located within the urban growth boundary of our community, was also determined to be geologically unstable. We developed a list of 23 criteria. We added two to that local from the committee for an alternate site selection. All these went into the selection at the Collins site. Millions of dollars were spent in the process of the site selection. This included extensive